Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Grass Cattle Company, it is the place that I get all my beef because you know where your food comes from. You know it's going to be a lot better. Raised, not sourced. I've gotten to know Tim, who runs Green Grass Cattle Company with his dad, and I've seen the care that they take with the cattle that they raise. And, I mean, they take care of these cattle, and that's why their product is so much better. And they'll deliver it right to your door. I've had a tri-tip there, which might have been the greatest slice of beef I've ever had in my entire life. But from T-bones to brats and all of it, you can get it at Green Grass Cattle Company. If you want to have a really, really nice meal at home with a nice glass of wine, you want to make sure that you're getting the top-end pasture-raised Angus beef. And that's what you get at Green Grass Cattle Company. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll see some of the work we've done with the beef that we've used on my smoker and on my grill from Green Grass Cattle Company, and you'll realize how delicious it is. I mean, they have bundles and specials, and again, they will send it right to your door. Just go to greengrasscattleco.com. That's greengrasscattleco.com.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, August 18, 2022. Thank you to Jesse Newell for the Kansas City Star, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Penner, Mike McFarlane, and Kevin Ioli for coming on the show. Right now, we have in studio from NFL Network and NFL.com, Jeff Chedia. Jeff Chedia on Twitter 27 minutes ago.
A team source tells me the groin injury sustained by Mecole Hardman isn't severe and that he should be fine.
Look at you.
Newsbreaker.
Look at you.
Who told you that?
A team source.
What's his name?
Source.
Okay.
First name team.
Trustworthy?
Very.
Was the team source...
Let me ask you, have I ever given you information that's been wrong?
No. No.
I think my average is pretty good.
No. Was that source a hard man to talk to?
A hard man to talk to.
I could be on Pat's ass all day. You know what I'm saying? Like,
he'd be a pretty good source about his groin.
Yeah, yeah. That, you know, it's a funny story. When I was in Denver for training camp earlier this year, we were talking about, I was talking to one of the reporters about Nathaniel Hackett, their head coach, and there was some frustration over how he talks about injuries. He's very covert. And so Jeff Legwald has covered that team for a long time. He covered the Titans forever. Great NFL reporter. And he was saying Mike Shanahan, when he covered Shanahan, had a similar approach to it. And he told a story about linebacker there, middle linebacker. His name was Al something. I forget his last name.
But Wilson?
Al Wilson. And so he was hurt one year in training camp. And so he was out for a few, you know, it's just a long period of time. The reporters kept asking him, hey, what's wrong with Al? What's wrong with Al? And every time Shanahan would say, he's got a little groin. Got a little groin.
So that's what's wrong with me. I get it.
So that's always funny when I hear that. But yeah, he's supposed to be fine.
But all kidding aside, that is important, you know, especially with this new look offense. That's what, you know, we've been talking about, the depth at wide receiver 1 through 4. They're stronger than last year, although, you know, no one's as good as Tyreek Hill. But then, you know, if you just, Mecole Hardman's Mecole Hardman, you put, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster and MVS and Sky Moore, that collection should be more productive than DeMarcus Robinson and Byron Pringle. And DeMarcus Robinson just got cut by the Raiders, so maybe he can come on back. Mm-hmm. But you know, you hear about that, and you see, groin injury, a guy that's, relies heavily on his speed, but you're saying no worries.
Yeah. I mean, I think even when it happened, from I wasn't at practice when it happened, but what I understand, in a team drill, he limped off and there was some concern, and he tried to walk away and got on a cart. But I think the fact that he was able to get on his feet and move a little bit was made them optimistic about it. And so now he's been evaluated. I think the feeling is, well, I know the feeling is that he's going to be okay.
Well, they had an MRI, so that's good. So they know. Yeah. Any mention of Chris Jones in his back that had him leave practice early?
Didn't get into that one. You worried about that?
That's the bigger concern for me. You know, I need Chris Jones lean and mean and healthy and ready to roll.
Yeah. Well,
so we'll find out. Hopefully he'll be good to go. And so now the Chiefs will be taking on Washington in their next preseason game. That's at 3 o'clock on Saturday. Final practice up in St. Joe today. Now that practice is wrapping up, you were up there a couple of times. We've seen their first preseason game. How you feeling right now about what's transpired over the past few weeks?
Well, I always preface these comments at this time of year by I try not to put too much stock in the preseason. But, look, I mean, I think the first drive was what you want to see from them. You know they're not seeing great defensive scheming going on there, but just the way the ball was moved around, six receivers touching it, ball coming out on time. That's the big mission for Patrick Mahomes this year, is to be more on time, to be more disciplined within the offense, because you don't have that threat down there like Tyreek Hill, who can break the game open and can improvise with you. And so being able to trust these other guys to be what they're supposed to be, and also to be able to improvise when they have to improvise. You saw that with Marquez Valdes-Scantling on that first drive where Mahomes got – you know, left the pocket, and they were able to make something happen with Mahomes rolling right, MVS coming back left, coming back to his right, and getting the ball, making the catch. So I like that. I think that's, you know, defensively, look, the Bears don't have the greatest offense in the world. It's no mystery.
their offensive line is brutal.
Yeah, it's rough. So while George Karlaftis and the defensive line had its way, I think that's also – yeah, you take it with a grain of salt. The opponent matters there, but overall, I thought it was a positive step, and I think they did what they wanted to do, which is what you want to do in a preseason game.
So I just was looking at this ranking that was put out of the average age of every team in the NFL based on what their projected 53-man roster is. This isn't going to be perfectly scientific because we don't know who everybody's 53-man roster is, but where would you guys think the Chiefs rank in terms of average age on their what we think would be their 53-man roster?
What the age is, or
yeah,
where they
average
rank?
Average age. Like, what do you think? Do you think they'd be one of the older teams or younger
teams? One of the youngest.
Yeah, second youngest roster in the NFL.
I mean, who do they have who's over 30?
Kelsey.
That's it, right?
Yeah. Deion Bush is 29.
I mean, that's...
How old's Joe Tooney?
I think he's like 28.
Yeah. That's...
Chad Henne's got to bring that age up. Hey, he's on the team.
Okay, yeah, he's on the team.
Right.
But, yeah,
right.
I think most of the guys, I mean, given who they've drafted and given who they've gotten rid of, that would make a lot of sense to me. But I'm trying to think who the oldest team would be right now.
Do you want to take any guesses, or do you want to give it to you?
Well, hold on a second. Let me think about it. The oldest team in the NFL.
It's in the Chiefs division.
Oakland?
Raiders. You
mean the Raiders?
Yeah.
Vegas?
The Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I would think the Rams would be up there, too.
So that one surprised me a ton because the Rams are just above the Chiefs at 25 years and 10 months. So that's because they've got a small handful of veteran stars, and then everybody else is a cheap young guy, right?
Yeah.
That's the way they've gone. And that's, I mean. The
Buccaneers probably are up there, right?
In terms of older teams.
Tom Brady alone's got a.
Yeah, they're fourth. Yeah. They're fourth. Mm-hmm. New England Patriots are second, and Arizona's third in terms of oldest teams.
Blake Bell's 31. That surprises me. Deion Bush is 29. Frank Clark's 29. Corey Coleman's 28, but he ain't going to be on the team.
Josh Gordon is over 30. Got to be over 30
by now. He ain't
going
to be on the team either.
Yeah, he's 31. No. Dunlap's 33.
Chad Henne's 37. Yeah, there's your guy.
37?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Kelsey's 32. Jarrett McKinnon's 30. Austin Ryder's 30. Danny Shelton's 29. He just got added. So, yeah. Oh, James Winchester's 33, the long snapper.
Yeah. I would bet you that just if you go across the league, like the average age is probably, even though the Chiefs are on the lower end of that spectrum, I would bet you that most teams are not holding on to too many guys over 30. It's just bad business.
Even the Raiders, who are the oldest team, their average age is 27 years and 5 months.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, like, yeah, even the old quote unquote old teams, their average age is 27. So it shows, yeah, it's a young man's league. But I'm that is exciting to me, like seeing, and I know there's going to be growing pains, right? We should expect that these guys will have some struggles and everything. But to me, if you have a team that's got like some decent veteran leadership, but then overall is a young roster, to me that's exciting. Is that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think this is always this is the next chapter. We've been talking about this for months now, of the Patrick Mahomes era, and it's really the most critical one because it determines what his rest of his career looks like. I mean, these are the guys he's going to be playing with for the most part. You know, a couple more drafts going in there, but the bulk of the team he's going to have around him is going to come from the last two drafts and the next two drafts.
Yeah, because they got 12 picks in next year's draft.
Yeah, and so those guys have to be players. You know, you look at – I always laugh when people – and it's more relevant now that a quarterback like Mahomes with this franchise, he's the Aaron Rodgers thing. Oh, how could it, they not have won more championships with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback? How could this not have happened? Well, it's hard. It's hard to do it. Mm-hmm. And so the clock starts ticking. It kind of blew my mind the other day when somebody was talking about, or I was reading, I think it was Nate Taylor in The Athletic, and he said, you know, Mahomes now in his sixth year as quarterback. That, it just kind of blew my mind. Like, it's already 6 years in.
Yeah, it feels like it's his third or fourth year or something.
It just went like that. And so you start thinking about, you know, 15 years is a long time to play quarterback in this league. And so if he plays 15 years, he's already a third of the way done. Over a third of the way done. And your point is well taken that, you have to, you know, they were going to get to this point sooner or later. They were going to start looking at younger talent to come in and play with him. I think this talent would have to start getting used to life without Tyreek Hill, life without Travis Kelce, life without whatever other star you want.
I'm not ready for
there.
Life without Kelce yet. Yeah. Well, ease me into that, please.
Yeah. So when you have greatness around you, like that's hard to it's hard to sustain that. It's hard to go out and find another guy who's going to be a Hall of Fame player for you. I mean, so it look how long it took between Travis Kelce and Tony Gonzalez. You know, I think Tyreek Hill will be a Hall of Fame player given the way his career has progressed so far. Like, how long will it take before they find somebody who can do what he does again? Is that guy going to show up before Mahomes leaves town? You know, so you have to have these guys who come in. Quantity sometimes trumps quality. You know, you have to throw a lot of darts at the board to get good players around your quarterback.
So you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and I saved this for your segment because I know that this is a very hot button with Nate. You are not. You accuse me of putting words in your mouth. You're not an Aaron Rodgers fan. Like, if there's an Aaron Rodgers fan club, you won't pay the dues.
Well, I used to be.
When was that?
I want to know, are you right now? I just emailed you something now. I want you to play.
No.
So you tell me when you got it.
I started kind of souring it like a couple years ago.
Yeah, but you go
I started souring on his aloofness. You know, like he just seems like an aloof. You know, I don't like the way he kind of big times his teammates on the field and things like that. I just kind of, I don't know. I don't like that. I kind of turned on him.
So here in a little bit.
I know he's a great player, but.
We're going to play a clip of Aaron Rodgers criticizing some teammates. I don't know if you saw this. But a day after he made his feelings on his receivers apparent, the wideouts were asked to meet in a quarterback meeting room at 8:45 a.m., Rodgers didn't call the meeting, but he did have some things to say during the assembly. And so it's interesting to me, like, if you see Tom Brady, like, yelling at a receiver on the sideline, or, you know, it's like, hey, Tom Brady's a hell of a leader. Look at him. He's telling these guys, that's what you need. And now I feel like it's Aaron Rodgers now. everyone's like in a-hole mode. Like, this guy, you know, he's calling out teammates. And I think, you know, it's all the how you view the player, right? I think we look at Mahomes, if he does something like that, we love it, right?
But oh, yeah.
Now Aaron Rodgers, and with good reason, because he is like Ben Roethlisberger had that reputation. He's not helping a young quarterback. That's not his job, right? Who was the other guy that said it's not his job to mentor a quarterback recently? Yeah, Ryan Tannehill. Mm-hmm. It's not my job to mentor. You know, and that's just this. Mm-hmm. Alex Smith was the total opposite. Mm-hmm. We're hearing a lot of talk from camp about Frank Clark, and then you know what mm-hmm. What was said about from Joshua Williams about L'Jarius Sneed. He'll go out. He's not one of those guys that keeps to himself. Do you have this clip? So this is Aaron Rodgers and what he had to say about his receivers. And Jeff, I want you to get your reaction to this.
You know, I didn't think we ran the ball very well, especially outside zone. Thought we were pretty good. Had some opportunities. A lot of mental errors. A lot of pre-snap penalties. So kind of in the theme of camp. Simple plays. We're messing up. So it's good to do it against another team. I like the energy from the first unit, but a lot of mental mistakes.
Aaron, at what point does that become a concern that it might carry over to the start of the season?
I mean, it's good. It's good we do it in practice. So it's unfortunately some of the same guys. That's, you know, repeat mistakes are a problem. So we just got to clean those things up a little bit. The young guys, you know, they got to, especially young receivers, we got to be way more consistent. You know, a lot of drops, a lot of you know, bad route decisions, run the wrong route. So we gotta get better in that area. But I felt like the line for the most part held up pretty good, which was good to see.
And so then the headline the next day, Packers young wide receivers meet with quarterbacks after Aaron Rodgers rant.
Like, so was that sound like a rant to me?
Sound pretty measured. Sound
yeah,
pretty.
Yeah, I don't have any issues.
Like,
with
but you know, but my point is, you just if you yeah. read it, you're thinking, oh, this guy is throwing his teammates under the bus.
Yeah. Because
that's what we think of Aaron Rodgers now. Or a lot of people do.
Yeah.
But then you hear it like, oh, no, it's, yeah. it seems like it's a constructive criticism. And
he didn't play in that game, either. I watched that game. I was I was in Arizona, and I was watching it in real time. And so Jordan Love played that whole game, and. Be honest with you, the thing that was my impression of the game was that his receivers early on helping him out because he threw three picks and two of them just bounced off his receiver's hands or, you know, just they could have caught the ball and it bounced in the air. And so I think he was more defending Jordan Love. And I honestly don't, I mean, as far as rants go, that's pretty tame.
Right.
I mean, that's, I never have a problem with anybody trying to hold a professional athlete accountable. With their play, now it's they have young guys, they have high standards, and he's expecting those guys to go out there and play. He didn't name any names; he just said it's the same guys doing the same stuff.
But when I read the headline that says, you know, Rodgers calls out young receivers with rant, I go, oh, let me hear this. We'll play this. They love this, and I listen to it, I go,
yeah.
What was that?
Yeah, this was that. No, you know? There's definitely an anti Aaron Rodgers sentiment out there that. Is partly self-inflicted. I mean, he certainly hasn't helped himself in the last 3 or 4 years in the way the last offseason went. But my experience with that team, and I've been around that team quite a bit over the last 3 or 4 years, is that the players who are there really like him. And you've seen photos of these guys at the Kentucky Derby together and at basketball games together. And, you know, he's a high-maintenance guy. But here's the dirty little secret of the NFL. Every quarterback who's a star in the NFL is a high maintenance guy. Every one of them. Yeah, they all
agreed.
Yeah. So it's like I don't put him into some category where he's doing things that are mind blowing in some way. It's like that's what quarterbacks do.
Well, Christian Watson, I don't know if I didn't watch the game, so I don't know if he's one of the ones with the drops, but I remember that was a big knock on him. You know, he's got the size, speed, athleticism to be a wide receiver, but he had a lot of drops. That was on his resume coming in.
I forget who was 87, I think it is. It was the guy who was dropping a lot of passes in that game. I think it's Romeo Doubs.
Okay.
Is one of the players they need to get going. But I go back to this, and Devontae Adams was very open about his relationship with Aaron Rodgers. At the end of last season, I don't know if you guys remember him. He had a couple press conferences where he talked about what Aaron Rodgers has meant to his career and how he's driven him to the heights that he's reached in his own, you know, his own playing days. And he talked a lot about just how much Aaron Rodgers pushed him and made him a better receiver. So if these guys end up having anything close to what Devontae Adams has had as a career because of what's happening with those statements, I think it's a positive. Because go back again. Go back and look at what Devontae Adams was doing year one, year two, and what they were saying about him in year one and year two. And it was a lot of the same stuff that was being said about these guys. Like, he's got to play better.
Okay, let me play a couple other clips. Not from Aaron Rodgers, from someone else. You'll figure out who it is. I just want you to react. Play number one.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
I know who that is.
Your thoughts, Jeff.
Yeah. I don't really understand. I still don't understand the quote. If you're fighting somebody with one ass cheek and three fingers, you're probably going to win the fight.
Let's hear it again.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
How about that?
That's Nate? The fight I want. Right. That's the kind of fight I want.
I'm not really sure the point he's trying to make there. Is he trying to say, I'm not going to take sympathy on you even though you only have three
what
toes?
What do you take away from it? That's what I want to know.
Or he's saying, if I have, his players have one ass cheek. And
I'm gonna find a way to overcome my lack of an ass cheek.
Two different people get two different things. Play it again and see what Marco thinks.
Doesn't matter if you have one ass cheek and three toes. I will beat your ass.
Marco, how does that make you feel?
He has no sympathy,
right?
For his enemy.
Mercy is for the weak, Machiavelli said.
Let's hear.
There's such a strong Gunther vibe.
Right. Let's hear one more. This is a little bit lengthier. This is Dan Campbell addressing his team.
Oh, good. Hey, morning. Just so, man, we're all on the same page. Here's the one thing I'm gonna lose my over. I will go eight. Man, if it's later in the game and you guys are out, some of you guys are out, and your teammates are out there, and some of these guys are scratching and clawing for spots, and I see you jacking around, you're looking up in the stands, you're laughing, you're not paying attention, you're being disrespectful to your teammate, I'm going to lose it. Just so we're on the same page. All good, man. All good. That would be the only thing. This is going to be fun, man. We were talking about it as a staff. It's going to be fun, man. I cannot wait to watch you guys play. We can't wait to watch you play. You're going to be able to cut it loose and have fun, man.
And so I spent some time watching Hard Knocks.
I bet you did.
I want him to succeed desperately.
Yeah.
I'm a Dan Campbell guy. You could describe me as that right now.
I bet you are.
Do you? Are you?
I've met him a few times. Yeah, back when he was playing. Yeah. I was at their camp. I think you were gone. I don't know where you were, but Nate was doing the show, and Marco jumped in there like I didn't even know who Marco was when he got on the radio. It was like, you know, when you have
still
your own landline and you're talking to your girl and your mom's on the phone. Like, yeah. You're like, got the phone, Mom. Who is this? Who is this? So sorry about that, Marco. But, yeah, I was at their camp that day, and, look, I see why people like him. I see why people like them as a dark horse candidate because, you know, when you can't see it when you're on the outside looking in, but when you're there and you feel the vibe. And when I was there, they were in full pad practice, and they aired that. A lot of that segment on their first show.
Right, I talked
show
about
Hard
that
Knocks.
Earlier. He was trying to explain them why he did it, and they were mad.
They were hitting. They were hitting. It was the most physical practice I've seen in training camp in probably anybody's training camp in probably 5 or 6 years. And I was like, this is old school. You know, a couple fights broke out. But you could tell the guys love playing for him. You can tell there's an attitude there about how they're going to play. They have a lot of coaches who I respect, who I knew, and who I talked to after practice.
Before you say anything, I'm going to tell you who I love so far watching this show, Aaron Glenn.
Yeah.
Stud. Yeah. Defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they got, Deuce Staley.
And then him and Deuce Staley going back and forth in the trash talking.
Yeah.
They could just have – Hard Knocks could just be them trash talking each other, and I'd watch a full hour of it.
And it's kind of funny because I watch it. And Deuce Staley to me is very similar in personality to Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah.
And Deuce Staley is increasing his odds of getting a head coaching job just from being on this show. Just by seeing him in the meeting room, just by seeing him interacting with players.
I think Aaron Glenn too.
Aaron Glenn too. Like, they've got a lot. They got, you know, they got three or four guys. Aubrey Pleasant is another guy on that staff who has a really good chance of being a head coach. But Hank Fraley played for Andy Reid in Philly. I remember him there. Mark Brunell is somebody. They've got a lot of guys. It's a great staff. And so they have guys who are being taught very well. They have to have some things break right for them. They took Jamison Williams from Alabama, the receiver. You know, he's still recovering from ACL, so he's not back yet. But they get him in the mix with DJ Chark, Amon Ross, St. Brown, TJ Hawkinson, and Jared Goff has DJ Swift. I mean, they've got an offensive line with a whole bunch of first-round picks. Easy schedule. And so, yeah, Sewell. So you look at it, and you're there.
Hutchinson looks good.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some good character guys, good character. The culture is good. What I'm saying, the culture is good, and Amon Ross St. Brown, I was talking to him after practice, their receiver, and he's got an edge to him, which I like. And he said, look, the Bengals showed us what can happen if you believe and you get enough good guys in the room. And that to me was a great point to make. It's like nobody was talking about the Bengals at this time last year.
Maybe
Nate was.
Have you watched any Hard Knocks?
He's the only guy in America.
Have you watched?
I watched the first episode. Yeah.
So when St. Brown, when they interviewed him, and he's still pissed off about where he was drafted, and they said he can name every wide receiver and where they played and where they went, and he rattled every one of them off just looking at the camera. Receiver, where they played and where they went, and he's like that. They said that he's fixated on that. Yeah. And he was good last year. And then you're right. If Jamison Williams, he can get healthy. I mean, they got something. And I like hearing more about Dan Campbell, like when they said, you know, he called up Bill Parcells. I might want to get into coaching. So he invited him down to Miami, and he was an intern. So he learned under Parcells. And then Sean Payton called him and said, hey, come and learn under me. I'll teach you everything I know. So he's learned under the right guys. I mean, we just see the sound bites and think, well, you know, this guy's nuts. There's something there.
I think the most encouraging sign of any young coach, any first year coach, when I look at what they do, who's their staff?
That's right.
That's huge.
Who do they take with them? You're not coming in trying to be like the genius. You're like putting people around you to make you better.
Football is a logistical operation as much as it is. You can talk about the tactics, X's and O's, and that stuff's important, but you got to run a huge operation.
Yeah.
53 guys. Plus a practice squad, all these different meeting rooms and all that stuff. It has to be a well-oiled machine. That's a part that Andy Reid does with camp. His camp is so well organized that they get work done. And having a staff is massive there. Because I do think, like I was talking about the Gunther Cunningham vibes that I get from him. The players loved Gunther when he first got the job here.
Right.
I remember talking to James Hasty, and he raved about him. Same type of thing. Passionate guy. He's earned everything. He's gotten along the way. He loves the players, all that stuff. But Gunther didn't have that great of a staff here. Gunther always seemed like he was trying to prove to everybody that he actually belonged in the job instead of just doing the job. Yeah. And I think that at some point the players started to figure out, okay, he's passionate, but he doesn't really have the game plan to get us where we want to go, and so they lost faith in him. If Dan Campbell has a staff and they feel like these actually are coaches that put us in position to win, then you keep the guys.
All right, we'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're tuned into the Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
At some point before the end of the show, we'll go live to I almost said River Falls, Wisconsin. That'd be a horrible report if we went live to River Falls. Live to St. Joe, Missouri, where Ty Lebo is, and Andy Reid will be approaching the podium, and we can get Jeff's reaction. Jeff, again, for people that missed it, you reported on Twitter. What did you hear about Mecole Hardman and his groin?
He'll be fine. Mm-hmm. He'll be just fine. They're not concerned about it.
What did you hear about Nate Bucati and his groin? Anything?
I haven't talked to his wife yet.
Right.
I'll report back on that one. Mm-hmm. He got five kids, doesn't he?
Yep.
I guess he got good groin.
I'm trying to keep up with this man. I don't want to keep up with you over there. I'm good
keep
at three.
Keep up with me.
I'm good at three.
I'm not done. Yes, I am.
We're a very potent morning show.
Right. It's exactly right.
Right. I got one. I got one was plenty. I love my son to death. Multiple just sounds like a real painful experience.
So the Chiefs are playing Washington. What is Washington as they come into Arrowhead Stadium on Saturday?
A team trying to figure things out. They've been a weird team to follow for the last couple of years, and I've known Ron Rivera for a long time, and I have a lot of respect for him and what they're trying to do. But it's just they have a lot of hope. They have high hopes for Carson Wentz. They think that he can play.
Too bad.
Yeah. Well, I think the one thing I'll say with him in that franchise versus where he's been before, I think sometimes playing for a defensive-minded coach can help a quarterback who can be turnover-prone, because they will be more likely to put you in situations where you're not going to be tempted to try to do things that can become problematic, as opposed to being in with the Colts with Frank Reich or the Eagles with Doug Peterson. And so, look, they're going to run the football. They're going to put people around him. They've got some talented young receivers like Terry McLaurin and De'Ami Brown.
Jahan Dotson.
Yeah, Jahan Dotson. And so all these guys are similar in makeup. You know, they're all kind of shifty. They got that guy from Carolina, Curtis, who was Curtis Samuel. He's still, I think, with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to try to throw short, be accurate, ball control, run it, and try to play good defense.
That's a nice little group right there, receivers.
That's what I'm saying.
It.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
Dotson
a bad mix.
And Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're kind of mystifying because they haven't been able to make all that work. You know, there's talent there. And so if they're able to get the quarterback to play well, they could be a surprise playoff contender. But I just feel like they've been under 500 the last couple of years. They made the playoffs as an under 500 team 2 years ago. But there's just something's missing there. And maybe it's just the quarterback play being better. But, yeah, I think the Chiefs are obviously a far better team and
right.
should have a similar type experience against them like they had against Chicago.
But you think that you think Wentz will be successful?
I think he'll be more successful. I didn't think he was awful in Indianapolis. The big complaint in Indianapolis was that when it came time to make a play, he wasn't making the plays. But you look at his numbers, I mean, he was 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. But they were 26th in the NFL in passing yards. So they were very conservative throwing the football. And what they want Matt Ryan to be is what Phillip Rivers was for them 2 years ago, which was a guy who could win with play action passing, create explosive passing plays with play action. And so if Carson Wentz, again, can be accurate and have less pressure on him, I think he's got a better chance of being successful. He's the best quarterback they've had in Washington in a long, long time, by far. He's better than Alex Smith as far as talent. You know, he's just not as smart and as consistent as Alex Smith is.
It would have been interesting to see what they could have done had Alex Smith not suffered that terrible injury.
Yeah.
You know, he would have solved all those problems you're talking about, at least consistency and the ability to make plays.
Yeah. And they had a winning record when he went down,
yeah.
if I remember correctly. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it's. Mm-hmm. But that division is. That conference is fairly wide open after the top four or five teams, and that division is certainly. You look at Dallas with what they're losing in receivers. I mean, they
I
got a lot
like
of
Philly.
Issues. Philly's to me is the best team in the division.
Yeah,
and
they got
not
the best
great.
Offensive and defensive line, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you put those two things together.
Yeah, and I also have look at their receivers.
Snatching AJ Brown, that was a big move for them.
You know, you got Devontae Smith. You got Jalen Reagor still there. You know, they're trying to deal him. Miles Sanders at running back. They've got Dallas Goedert at receiver. They got a lot of guys, a lot of weapons around their quarterback. And so
you like Hurts?
I do. I think he's limited to a certain extent, but I think he's a smart player, and I think he plays within himself. And when he does that, good things happen. Now, do I think he's a franchise, go out and pay him $40 million, $45 million a year type quarterback? I don't think he's that for you, but he's got this year to prove it. And he's like Tua. You got everything around him. He's had some success, moderate success, and now you got to go out and you got to show that you can play at a high level with all those things around you.
Who's better, him or Tua? If you had to put money on one of them.
I think he is because he stays healthy. You know, the thing about Tua I don't like is that when you're a small quarterback and you can't run, you better be just killing people with your accuracy, which is what Drew Brees did with his career.
Tyreek Hill says he's more accurate than Mahomes.
He may be, but that doesn't really matter if you're throwing 5-yard passes, right? I mean, at some point you got to push the ball down the field, and you've got to be able to threaten people. And what I don't like about Tua is that he doesn't really scare you with anything he does. I think a great quarterback, Mahomes, is the arm strength. With Josh Allen, it's the arm strength and the mobility. With Tom Brady, it's just the all the experience and all the knowledge. You know, even at his age, it's like Aaron Rodgers can make every throw in the book. It's like every quarterback who's great, you can look at it and say, this is what you don't want him to do. With Tua, there's nothing that makes you want to say that. It's just like he's just – well, that's what scouts will say.
Right.
You know? I mean, he played with great – he played with 5 first-round picks at receiver at Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, he had some targets. Adam Kaplan's on the show earlier, and he said he would take the over – on the win total with the Dolphins is 8.5, over or under?
I would take the over. I feel like, and I think they're going to have a big break with the Browns being, the quarterback being in danger of not being able to play at all this year. I believe the AFC West has a great chance of having 3 playoff teams, but the math, the schedule, easily can make that 2. Just because they could beat each other up. And so I could see Miami sitting there with a great chance of snagging a wild card spot just because they're in a great situation. The AFC South will only have 1 team coming out of it. The AFC North, we'll wait and see what happens there. But I think they will be in the mix. I think they'll win 10 games with that group.
What do you think the suspension ends up at for Deshaun Watson? I saw a report yesterday saying it'll be more than the 6, but it won't be the whole season.
Yeah, I'd probably say it probably falls at 10. I think that'd probably be my guess. I think it's going to be an even number.
Well, they ain't making the playoffs, so they go 10 games with Jacoby Brissett.
Well, that's the thing. I think it has to be to an extent that you don't go through all this stuff for a 2-game bump. But also, I think it's unfair to take a whole season away from a guy who has got no criminal situation going on here. And I think it's wrong that there's no attention being paid to the Houston Texans' role in all this. If all this talk about where we want to hold owners and, you know, executives to a higher standard.
They hosted this, lot of it.
Yeah, they settled. They obviously have admitted to some kind of complicit behavior in this, and there's been no discussion about what's going to happen to them. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when the league appealed this, and I just said, look, I'm a big fan of evidence. I'm a big fan of process, and it's not that you're defending Deshaun Watson if you bring these things up, but it's important to remember that the NFL is not an investigative body. You know, like they don't have what the police have. They don't have what DAs have to go look at evidence. And so I'm all for, hey, if you got a conduct policy and you feel like someone's embarrassed you, you know, I totally understand you got the right to go ahead and punish somebody, but I also think that if you're trying to say there's evidence that that you have over what the legal process didn't provide, or that the legal process or a judge who's reviewed these kind of cases shouldn't matter in this, I think that that's wrong. I think that should be a big part of how you decide how you punish somebody.
Have you watched the Manti Te'o documentary?
You know, I just actually saw that on, as I was scrolling through last night trying to find, I watched Elvis. You know, by the way, great job with your Elvis
impression.
Oh, thank
you. I appreciate
at the
that.
The 810 show. So you actually made me want to go watch Elvis, the movie, which was entertaining. And as I was looking around for stuff to watch, I saw that Manti Te'o thing. So he's got a documentary out about his girlfriend, the catfish, and all
that. The girlfriend
stuff.
Who didn't exist.
Yeah.
I was 2 episodes. I watched the first one, just watched. I don't know what to tell you. What it tells me, at least after watching the first episode, is a lot of people owe him an apology.
Really?
Yes. Because I think people assume, like, what's your assumption about this?
So the girlfriend existed?
Well, no, that he was...
Made it up? Or he was involved in making it up?
No, he was... People assume that he made it up and just did this for sympathy, whatever. At least the way they painted it so far, he was a victim. He was catfished.
Mm, okay.
He was trying to get attention, you know, he made up this girlfriend. People thought that. A horrible thing, yeah.
Right? Yep. And the media thought that.
Yep.
But unless there's a total turn of events that I'm not anticipating in episode two, he was catfished
mm-hmm.
by this crazy.
You can tell me the story. I'm not watching it.
You gotta watch it.
Two episodes.
I thought it too, just from a perspective of they go in pretty deep, like how grave a high school athlete he was. And I thought this was interesting. I told the story earlier and about how he was deciding between USC and Notre Dame. And he wanted to go to USC, but his parents told him to pray about it, and he was at church, and he got a sign that he thought God was telling him to go to Notre Dame, and it shows him on signing day, and he's in tears. Like, he's like,
didn't want to go.
I didn't want to go to Notre Dame. I didn't want to go to South. I wanted to go to USC and play for Pete Carroll. I don't want to go to Notre Dame. I don't want to go to South Bend. And then they show the video, and you see him. It looks like he's signing a paper to go to jail.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just really interesting stuff about him and how – because we do forget how great of a player he was.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been catfished at USC.
Right.
That's a deep pond over there.
Wow.
I'm trying to describe
just
this without
the hook in there. Yeah.
Without giving away some of the stuff, but I mean, it went so far as there was a guy that was acting like the girl's cousin that went mm-hmm. and met him and brought the niece, and they were there. It's like all this. One person went to all these great lengths to fool him, and he bought it,
yeah.
And he was super, I mean, like, unbelievably naive and gullible to fall for this. But then you kind of understand why, and even his parents.
Okay, you got me watching.
It makes you look at it totally differently.
Yeah,
and you feel, like, so far, like, I feel so bad for him. Like,
yeah,
good God.
Yeah, you know.
Dude, I didn't know what the word I learned the word catfish because of the Manti Te'o thing. And
that
then, like,
the show on MTV came
out.
Right?
I remember Jake telling us, I think that show was out at about the same time. And Jake's like, oh, you never see that show on MTV?
I love that show.
I don't know.
Well, I'm like, how in the hell are you falling for this? And then,
show was like Dateline to Jake.
Yeah, that's right.
I've never
catfish Katerian.
I've never existed in the online dating community. You know, I met my wife before that stuff was really a thing. And so
it all started on Facebook.
Yeah.
Is he?
Is
but
that
you
right?
But you have to wait. Yeah, because yes, he got a friend request from. You got it.
I'm watching it now. Like, I'm watching it as soon as the show's over.
Because I'm trying not to give it away. But the first 5 minutes, as soon as you sit down, the first 5 minutes, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How you got to. You got to have a good opening, you know, to a show.
Oh, it's good.
I want to watch it because it was between that Elvis and Pam and Tommy. For me, and I turned on. I thought Pam and Tommy was a movie. I didn't realize that was an 8-part series. So I was like,
well, people been telling me you got to watch this documentary about the Woodstock '99.
There's a different video of Pam and Tommy that I could show you.
I've seen that one
quicker. I don't know, not 8 episodes.
That was VHS.
Right to the point.
Literally. So, Marco, no Andy Reid. What's the update up there? Lebo sending text messages saying there's...
Oh, the shock jocks?
Lebo just said Andy Reid may take a pic with each person in the military.
Yeah.
Which, you know what? Good. They deserve it. But that's... Knowing Todd the way I do, the frustration in that text message, Todd sitting there saying, waiting for Andy Reid to come over. And look, when you're covering practice, it's like, come on. But it's Military Appreciation Day, and Andy is going to every member of the military that's there and taking a picture with him. But Todd's not interested in that. Todd's interested in getting Andy Reid up at the podium.
But didn't I hear some story about Todd at practice throwing a football back? It sounded like he kicked some kid in the head and like rolled him down the hill.
Reid was kicking field goals, and they were going out in the crowd, and one bounced, and Lebo raced over to it and beat a kid to got the football. And so then it's the way we look at it, it would be a thrill for a kid just to get their hands on NFL football and throw it back on the field. And instead of handing the football to the kids to throw it on the field, Lebo wants to show off his arm and just throws it on the field. He gets booed by people in the media tent and on the hill. And Sam McDowell said that it seemed like Lebo wanted to show his arm off, and it wasn't a very good throw. Todd says it was a perfect spiral, and he was trying to teach these kids that not everything is handed to you. You got to earn it. They should have got to that football quicker. So you tell me who's the bad guy there.
I'm a hard ass. I'm sorry.
Every time I hear the story, it sounds 10 times worse.
Right.
Like, I didn't know he was racing over to get that's the football. What
he pushed over three kids, pushed them down the hill.
Three kids. That's exactly did the gritty around him as
the
after.
The football went off.
Held his hand up in the air. Like.
What I heard is the football went on the top of the media tent, and that was as it was coming off the media, it would have bounced to the kids.
So the kick was wide right.
He got up there and caught it.
Okay.
Instead of letting it go to the kids.
Gotcha.
And people, boo! Mm-hmm. And so then... you can make up for it, hand the ball to the kid. Let that kid air it out, throw it back to whoever. And then Lebo just threw it, and then people are booing him.
That's not what shock jocks do.
That's right. That shock jock up there.
Shock jock. That's just shock jock behavior.
You say something over there.
Well, the reports also, you know, is that Mecole Hardman and Chris Jones and all the guys that are carrying these minor injuries.
Juju.
Came back down to the field to be a part of the final moments of camp. So... corroborating our insider Jeff Chedia's news that the injury, at least to Mecole Hardman, is not serious.
Seems well, that's
like
good.
Everybody's going to be.
Or anybody else, it sounds like.
Yeah, at least I don't know that they're doing anything other than, you know, ceremonially being a part of the
this
end.
This is the last day
of
camp.
This is it. They're breaking it down.
Long camp. I thought they were already out. That they were breaking it down. Most camps are done by now.
Now, here you go, Jeff. Big Ten lands 7-year media rights agreement with Fox, CBS, NBC, Peacock, and FS1 worth a record $7 to $8 billion.
It's not bad for a nonprofit.
A
contract escalators may increase value to nearly $10 billion, so the Big Ten is not done expanding, sources said. Who do you want?
Well, I guess anybody they want to get now, right?
I'm going to ask you this question. Again,
who would I?
Do you want Kansas?
Do I want Kansas?
Do you want Kansas in your conference? Adam Teicher says no. I want to know. Do you?
Well,
want
we know Adam's scared. You know, he's scared of Kansas being in the league.
You look at him right there. Do you want him in your conference? Look at Nate. Do you want him in your conference? You tell me that right now.
I don't know. I don't know if we can be compadres like that. Where as a Kansas, where do you think they should end?
You want in? You want in this?
Any port in a storm, baby.
Say something right now. You want in the Big Ten? They're going to expand.
Look,
their money's everywhere.
I don't think the Big Ten's interested in Kansas.
I said, are you interested in the Big Ten?
Well, if they were to extend an invitation, I think Kansas would be foolish to turn it down at this point. But I don't think that's in the cards. I don't think they're interested in Kansas.
I think all invites from the Big Ten are about growing the pot.
Who do you want?
Who do you want?
Well, how else are nonprofits supposed to operate? They're supposed to operate by the almighty dollar and screw everything else. That's
who do
what
I want? Well, who's left? Well, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's probably the grand prize.
Bring in Notre Dame, huh?
You know, everybody else kind of fills it out. I think they're going to take another couple West Coast schools. I'd be shocked if Oregon and Washington weren't part of the package, just because you've already got UCLA,
with
USC
the Nike
out
money,
there,
don't
and they
you?
Want to be able to, yeah.
Yeah. Stanford? You want Stanford?
I don't know if they bring enough to the table. I mean, they're in the Bay Area, but they don't really drive a lot of interest. You know, the TV market there is not rip-roaring for college football, period. Stanford or Cal. I think it's Oregon and Washington before.
They got that academic prestige.
But those Arizona schools.
I think they're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm the Big 12, I'm definitely talking to those two. I'm talking to Arizona, Arizona State. I'm talking to Utah and Colorado about you know, coming back.
I mean, you don't want
Colorado? If I'm the Big 12, I'm making the move. I'm not sitting around waiting because...
Be the aggressor for a change.
We're talking about growing pot. Colorado would be good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Growing the pot.
Grow the pot. That's the number one school on the list.
Shut it down at that point.
Right.
No, but I feel for... I hope... What hurts Kansas, obviously, is the football program. You got to have a big
you
know, football program. You don't have a great TV market.
Don't get it wound up, please.
Here's the thing, though.
It's the end of the show.
Kansas,
wound up.
Kansas could have a good football program like Kansas State. What hurts Kansas and Kansas State is where they are.
Well, the TV market.
It's the TV market. But does UCLA have some great football program? They suck.
Whoa.
They've had a great football program.
I mean, when was the last time they were great at football?
Hold on.
Oh, my stars.
I think when Troy Aikman was there, they were pretty good.
This guy's lashing out.
I think when Kate McCown was there, they were pretty
30
good.
30 years ago?
He just said when Troy Aikman was there.
back when,
I was expecting something else.
Kansas had a good football program back when Dutch Lomborg was running the ball, you know?
John Riggins, boy.
Troy Aikman was there.
USC was good when Marcus Allen was running the ball, you know.
So you want him to stay put. That's what you want to
stand
do.
Pat.
No, I like I said, if the Big Ten wants to offer him a deal, I think that would be they'd be foolish to turn it down. I just don't think that's happening because they're not in the TV market.
Yeah.
They don't have the TV market. So I think the best thing, I'm with you, Big 12 ought to be aggressive. You know, stop sitting back and just, you know, be a victim all the time. Go out and you know, obviously that's who's getting rewarded in the
UCLA was 8-4 last year. Six and three in the conference.
Powerhouse. Yeah. 8-4. Look at
that's
that.
Like eight, that's like 8 years of KU football right there.
Wow.
8 wins.
I'll bet you KU has won a BCS bowl more recently than UCLA has.
What are you yelling at me for?
My point is they didn't pick UCLA and USC because they've been awesome at football lately. USC was 4-8 last year. Yeah. It's because they're in Los Angeles. That's why true. They picked them. You know, I mean, and that's just what it is. And you can't, like, just magically make 8 million people appear in the state of Kansas.
Got him so wound up, he's going to run home.
How'd they get Nebraska?
How's that worked out for Nebraska, by the way?
Well, 7 billion.
The Border Patrol has been brought to you by Walker Medical Linen Services, setting the standard in healthcare laundry services for hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in Kansas City. Walker Medical Linen delivers laundry you can depend on. HLAC certified to the highest standards. It's Walker Medical Linen Services, online at walkermls.com.
Bye-bye.